What is going on, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blandford, and today we are talking to Mike Thornton. So Mike is a realtor and a real estate investor, and I think that's pretty cool. I love getting somebody on this show having a career that we've never, you know, talked to, because it is so interesting to hear about their industry. And I think this episode is so cool because it's a behind the scenes into what it's like to be a realtor. It also has an amazing story. Mike just has this cool story of how he even got to where he is. He starts out in a totally different industry and just feels this burden to go into real estate. And so we get this whole insider track into how that even worked and the sort of money that he had to save and the sort of process and an incredible process of God taking him through something. And so you get to hear all of that. And I just love a great story of God bringing you to your current career. And we also get into this episode how Mike sees his job as kingdom work. And I think it's great. It's just great. Now, I feel like people in the sales industry sometimes can get a bad rap. Like, it can feel sometimes like people in the sales industry are just there to sell you something. And I think Mike takes this totally different look at this, where, you know, he's viewing himself as a consultant and really helping somebody get the best out of this real estate transaction. Doing real estate, buying a house, selling a house is one of the most stressful things that most people go through. And I think Mike sees himself as really interceding and like being this someone who can really support somebody through a difficult time of life and community. And there's so much good stuff to this episode. I think you're going to love hearing about just the way he sees Christianity playing into all this. And so, yeah, you're going to love this episode. It's awesome. Mike's a really cool dude. We get off talking a lot about both being Enneagram 3s, which, you know, I'm always down for a little Enneagram talk. And just about how, you know, work-life balance works, or, you know, how to be efficient in your work. And so we are off on so much great stuff in this episode. You're going to love it. So while you're thinking about it, if you don't mind, will you leave me a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast? That just helps get the word out. You can also share these episodes on social media. That always helps, like, get it out to your community. You know, maybe share even what you got out of the interview. That always helps. So I would greatly appreciate you doing that. If you have time, if you're thinking about it, please do that. You can follow me on Instagram at Theology of Hustle. I've got great stuff coming up, great stuff coming down the pipe. So you will always be informed if you follow me there. You can also follow me on Twitter at Curry Blandford, making sure you're staying up with all the Theology of Hustle happenings. I've got some great episodes still to come. And this episode, solid gold, people. You're going to want to share it, tell all your friends about it. So I hope you enjoy hearing from Mike. All right. Well, Mike, I can't say thanks enough, man, for inviting me into your space and letting me chat with you a little bit.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me.
It's good to hang out. It's not Five and Hook, but, you know, it's all good.
I feel like I see you all the time, but it's in the same context.
Right.
You're having a coffee with somebody and I'm coming in to grab my morning brew as well.
Definitely. All right, man. Well, let's just jump off and just have you introduce yourself to everybody a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm Mike Thornton, married, husband, father. Four little boys at home, which keep me very, very busy.
That is a lot of them.
They are, they're very close in age as well. So my wife and I have our hands full, but yeah, so I have a real estate business, out of Glen Ellen, but live in Wheaton. So kind of service those areas. Just a real estate junkie.
Yeah.
Love real estate. Love my community and just excited to be on today.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
Let's jump back into your story, because real estate wasn't like the thing, right? Forever. I mean, You went to school for something completely different, had a different career. Can you talk just a little bit about like that whole saga?
Yeah. Saga is a good word for it, man. Like that's, so my dad's owned a real estate business in Detroit for 45 years and it's kind of in my blood. And I think I kind of resisted that.
Yeah.
I've always had a love for real estate, but it was something that I never thought I would do for a living.
Right.
So, you know, growing up in Detroit, went to Michigan State, was studying supply chain, and was just super excited about kind of getting that first job. And real estate was very much on the back burner. I mean, I did have my license when I was in Michigan with my dad to help him out for a couple summers.
Oh, okay.
And to try to learn the business and kind of help him out a little bit. Yeah. But it was something I was always interested from an investment standpoint. I've always looked at real estate and I've been fascinated with how do you create value?
Yeah.
Or how can you take something and make it more beautiful or have better utility? And so that's always interested me. And the reason I got my license in Michigan was to learn more about investing, or maybe one day I would, you know, do a flip like all the TV shows. I mean, that was like in the heyday of the TV shows you know, everyone's making $200,000 on a flip, which is not true. But, but long story short, went to Michigan State, graduated and came out to Chicagoland. And that's the reason why I'm here, to work for Kraft Foods. And was so working for a very big company, doing different roles, supply chain management roles, sales roles. And it wasn't until my wife and I bought our house that the juices started flowing a little bit. And I said, I got to get my license. And still, it wasn't because I wanted to have a career in real estate. I was still very much in the honeymoon phase at Kraft and was just excited about having a job. And everything was very new. Living in a new city, just got married, all those things. And I said, I'll get my license and we'll try this investing thing.
Yeah.
And we did. So I had a buddy who does real estate investing for a living, and we partnered on a deal together and we went through with it and everything was great. But I was like, I don't know if that's it either. Like, I'm like, it was fun. We did a flip
Really? So you like did a full on flip?
We did. Yeah. And
I mean, how much of that did you?
I was very much a partner in it, but not, I put up some capital. And then I did a lot, because I had a real estate license, I did a lot of legwork in finding the deals and vetting the deals. But from the construction side, I knew nothing.
Yeah,
like, literally, I still can't swing a hammer. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to do anything construction related. So this guy, he knew very much how to do all that. He knew how to manage the contractors. So he said, okay, put up a little bit of money if you'd like. And then also, if you can manage the real estate side of things, be vetting out deals, negotiating, things like that, I'll take you alongside and I'll show you the contracting piece.
Okay.
And so we very much both had skin in the game and it was fun, but it was interesting because I still was missing, I think, part of why I'm so passionate about what I'm doing now. And it was the relational side of things. I didn't realize it at the time, but yes, I do love real estate, but I was itching more so to be in community with people. And the job as it was at Kraft didn't allow for me to be investing in people. It was so, they cut so many people out of the workforce and you literally were just running around with your head cut off. Oh, and geez. Managing that flip was kind of the same way. You were very in and out with contractors. And I think I realized after the fact that, hey, I think I like the brokerage side.
Yeah.
Like, I want to work with buyers and sellers. People say that selling real estate is like the third most stressful thing you can do, other than like burying a family member and public speaking. People hate it. Like, it makes sense if you think about it. It's like, okay, Curry, you're going to go sell your house and you have kids and you have a wife, and on 2 hours' notice, you have to get your butt out of there and you have to show your house, and it's going to happen 30 times before you sell it.
Right.
And then you're going to have to pack up all your stuff and move it. And oh, by the way, you're going to have to manage the timing of all that.
Right.
And then you're going to have to do a second round of negotiating after you thought you were done with the first because you had an inspection done. So
right.
It's like, but it's an opportunity to kind of come alongside people during a very stressful time.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, in an industry that has a very low bar for service.
Yeah.
And to take care of people.
Right.
And I think after that, I was like, you know, I don't know if investing is going to be my main business. I might do that again.
Yeah.
But I really want to work with people day in and day out, helping them buy and sell real estate.
Yeah. That's cool, man. I love that. Yeah. And because you're right. I even think about, you know, we bought our house, but we were coming out of a rental. So there was only one thing to sort of handle, and it about put me over the edge. I like the thought of selling my house and buying a new one, like just kind of
don't
kills
think
me.
Too hard about it. You might not. Yeah. It's a very stressful situation.
Yeah.
And it's funny, people in our industry, that, you know, people sometimes ask, oh, do you work with just sellers or just buyers? We work with both. And they say, well, what do you like to do more? And I think the right answer, if you're a real estate agent, say a listing, because a listing can then produce another buyer. But if we're really honest with ourselves, working with buyers are fun.
Yeah.
Like, they're excited. There's a whole new chapter. When you talk to a seller, like another set of showings, like how many more times do I need to get out of my house and coordinate these things? So you're right. I mean, it's it's an opportunity to be very intentional with somebody during a very stressful part of their life.
Yeah.
And to provide a service.
Right.
And to create value.
Yeah.
And I think as a Christ follower, that's what, you know, I'm here to do. And it's funny, we can talk, if you don't mind, talk a little about that transition, because
I think
when I was typical guy, I had thought about this transition for like 3 years and never mentioned anything to my
wife. So moving out of like moving out of craft and your degree and your career,
things that made sense.
Right.
I had thought about it for so many hours. So you wouldn't believe it. I don't think I ever mentioned it to my wife until like 2 years into the process. Like, and of course I, blurted out to her as if I had it all figured out, and she's completely off guard. And then I'm upset at her reaction because she's blindsided by this fact that I think my words were, I'm going to quit my job.
Wow. Like,
that's how I positioned it. Really smart, right? Like a really great way of selling it for somebody that's getting into sales, right? So I completely blindsided her. And to her credit, you know, we kind of backed it up a little bit, and she's like, okay, well, what are you actually thinking? She's like, I trust you. What are you thinking? And I know your passion. She already knew my passion for it, but she didn't know I wanted to do it full time. And so the hardest part was I think we decided kind of that we were going to go that route. But it took another like 18 months to play out probably. I mean, it took a good, I'd say about 18 months. And because what I did know is that I was going to be starting from scratch in a new career. I had now 3 kids, 1 more on the way. And I didn't know how much I was going to make, if anything.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'd done enough research where people are, you know, if you're really good at this, you might make your first check like 3 or 4 months into the process. So to put it all in perspective, I told my wife, I said, the first year I'm going to make probably 25% of what we made. Second year, maybe 50. Hopefully by the third year, we're whole. That was just kind of my projection and my plan. And so to the outside world, you know, it looked like a really stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
But I just knew, and it wasn't that the Lord had necessarily said you need to change careers, but I also believe the Lord gives us the wisdom to choose.
Yeah.
And I think the Lord could have done what he needed to do in my heart with that job or this job. But I think the beautiful thing about it is he also gives you just the wisdom to choose. And like, where are you going to thrive? Like both are probably okay.
Yeah.
Like I don't personally believe it's like God wants me to be in this job versus another. What he wants to do is work in my heart a certain way to make me a certain type of person that can be more like Christ.
Right.
And for me, my thought was I can do that better in this new job. So, you know, we made the jump, and it was a really tough like last 6 months at Kraft, because I completely was checked out mentally. Like, I'm onto this next thing. I'm thinking ahead and planning ahead. And it was really risky, but also wasn't. It was risky from many people's perspectives. But for me, for the first time, I was going to start building upon something that I had so much passion around.
Right.
That even though it started, you know, well under the financial means of what I was used to, I was now building something.
Yeah.
And every day at that old position, I felt like I wasn't building anything. I felt like I was kind of going through the motions, and I was kind of dead inside, dead emotionally. And that just, I knew that wasn't a safe place to be, and that I needed to get up and be excited about what I was going to do.
Yeah.
So we made the decision, and it was great, but it was also hard, right? Like, so for instance, I transitioned to full-time. Now, I had done deals before that. I had done a few deals a year for probably 3 years before that, or 4 years before that.
Yeah.
Very much part-time, just, you know, as people that I knew, you know, needed some help, I would help them. But for perspective, I think we planned to not make any money for 9 months. And I just about made no money for 9 months.
Gosh.
I mean, I did, but I didn't, right? So I think on my 2017 return, I made like 95% of my income before I transitioned to real estate. But I could see momentum building. And quite frankly, I am good at it. I love it. Like, I love people and I love the product. And I was confident it was going to be able to, you know, feed my family and also be something that I'm passionate about. And it was so funny because I transitioned in July of 17, and February of 18, we were part of a church plant, and we were sitting down, and it was the week before Super Bowl Sunday, and we had our prep service and how is this all going to look? And I was sitting in a group of people that were going to be small group coaches. So I was leading a small group. I was going to be a small group coach, and I was also involved in the kids community. And I felt like this mini breakdown of like, okay, I've barely made any money. I'm now committed to how many different things here. And I remember thinking to myself, there was a lot of surrender in that moment.
Yeah.
So when people say like, I gave it to God, I don't really know what that means for a lot of people. For me, it was kind of like acceptance. Huh. It was like, I know you want me here. I know I'm supposed to be on the front lines of this church and I'm going to do that. I'm scared as scared can be, but I'm going to do it. Mm. And it was so crazy. And I think this is definitely the Lord is literally the next day I got a call. Hey, I need you to come list my house. And this was like when things hadn't really started to build enough that I was like really able to pay the bills yet. I had right. done deals and whatever, but the next day, boom, 2 days after that, boom, 2 days mm-hmm. after that, boom, where that next month was one of my best months I've had to date. It was a great month. And I ended the year being, you know, top, you know, 5% of the office. So it all has worked out and continued to build. But I had that moment where I was, you know, 7 months into the process and like, I'm out of money.
Yeah.
Gosh. And God, I need you to like, yeah. I'm going to be all in this church. Like I know you want me here. And it was that little bit of acceptance. Mm. And I don't think it's coincidental that things started rolling downhill after that. He provides at the very right time, right?
Yeah.
And the time you need it the most. And he did. And it was literally like within 12 hours, that moment sitting there, like panicked, like, how is this all going to work? I'm overcommitted here. I'm not making, you know, and I'm, so yeah. it was just, but it was the God's hand has been on it the entire time. Yeah.
When we talked a little bit about you being an Enneagram 3, right? We've chatted about yep. this. And for us Enneagram 3s, it's really, we want to do it ourselves a lot of times. And our success is like how we feel love, you know? Sure. And so in that moment, you're like, I would imagine you felt successful at nothing you were doing per se, right? And correct. To like give that to God, right? That's like yeah. powerful. So
being a 3, learning about the Enneagram and kind of my makeup has been so helpful because like my biggest fear as a 3 is not being seen as capable.
Yeah. Right.
Like not being seen as capable, like people feeling bad for me, like kills me. Not in a good, right. like I'm like, don't feel bad for me. Right. I'll be all right. Like even though I like, they probably could feel bad for me. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's like one of those things where don't think I'm not capable kind right. of thing. And
yeah.
And so I've struggled with that and like the performance based, you know, acceptance stuff. And big part of my journey has been just learning. And my wife has really helped with this and, you know, my church community and everything, but she's very much not that way. And she's been able to speak into me very, in a very healthy way of your performance is not your value.
Right.
And you know, that's kind of how I grew up. Huh. No fault of anybody. Yeah, yeah, it's just right. kind of my makeup. Yeah. And when I'm in a bad place, that's kind of where I go is if I'm performing, I have value. And if I'm not performing, I don't have value.
Yeah.
So learning that that's not how Christ works is still a daily struggle.
Right.
But I feel like I'm in a much better spot there. But yeah, in that given moment, I felt like,
yeah,
oh man, this
is killing me. I haven't made a paycheck in 7 months. What is like, oh, yeah, man. Like
to have my kids one day be like, oh, he was a bum. That would kill me. Like, and you know, we're not going to get to that point. So everything is good. But yeah, that was a very, very, it's one of those turning points. And, you know, it's cool because I don't, in this church transition too, the pastor of our church, he's a good friend and he was dealing with a lot of this stuff in a very different capacity months before I transitioned to real estate, where he was leaving a position at a church and was doing very well and felt like, you know, wow, this seems risky to go to start a new church.
Right.
And working through that, we had a lot of good conversations about, well, like, if I'm not seeing God work, why is that? Is it because I'm not actually risking something where I'm needing him to show up?
Right.
And I think that's, at least me personally, I've been in that position a lot in my life where it's like, God, show up, but I'm also not giving him any space to do it. I'm trying to control everything. I feel like I have such a tight grip on it. I'm not letting go, or I'm not risking anything.
Right.
Like without actually risking something, it doesn't need to be job risk or financial risk. It could be something else. It could be relational or emotional risk or being vulnerable or whatever. But if you're not risking something, then you're not giving God space to show up. And then right. you can't attribute him showing up in your life and have that testimony.
Yeah.
So I was encouraged by that. And it was a lot of what he was speaking. My pastor Ted was speaking to me at the time because he had just went through it. Hmm. And he's like, my faith has been deepened so much because I took this risk and God showed up.
Wow.
And so that was encouragement for me to do the same because I knew if I could just weather the storm of the transition, I love people. I love real estate. The time at Kraft with those, with my positions there helped instill in me a certain professionalism and some skills that I think translate very well to this industry. And I just knew it would be successful because I love getting up and doing it.
Right.
But you got to get to that point where you're actually able to feed your kids too.
Right.
There's that tension.
Right. Let's see, eating or right. fulfilling career, because I think it can very easily, we can drift into a career that is not fulfilling because we feel like we're the, especially for us guys, right? There's this maybe cultural expectation that we're the breadwinner, that we handle everything, that we have control, and we can get trapped in careers that are just unfulfilling and like kill us inside while trying to like maintain this, you know,
keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah, right.
I looked around at my old, in the building of my own workspace, and believe me, people are thriving there. There's certain people that are very much thriving there.
Yeah.
But I was looking around, at least for me, and I was saying, okay, the more you quote unquote succeed in this place, the more and more you travel, the more you take on, the more stress you have. And it wasn't going to fill the buckets that I needed to be filled. Right. Yeah. I need some autonomy. I'm very entrepreneurial. I need autonomy. So you get less and less autonomy, it feels like, as you go in that world. Here I have more and more autonomy. It's not that I don't want to work for anybody. That's not it. But I also want that creative, the ability to create and the ability to have some sort of autonomy over how this might look is very life-giving for me.
Yeah.
And so I knew I was wired that way. And I said, I would regret not working on something that I knew was closer to my wiring.
Yeah.
That was a fear. Like I was fearing getting to a certain point in time where I didn't try this because, you know, it wouldn't make any sense anymore because I was so far along or I had so many years in and it felt like I couldn't go backwards and start over. And I still felt that way, but it would have been even worse a year later. It'd been even worse a year after that.
Right.
And I was like, I need to do something where I'm wired because of my gifts to succeed and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like I get up and there's a new set of challenges. There's a new set of stresses, but I love it.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to get up and see where, you know, what challenges, you know, the day, you know, are in front of me that day and to conquer them.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think that's important for us to just always be thinking through, right? And like kind of getting that view of, you know, where we're at and like how our jobs are fulfilling us, even though that's not the primary concern all the time, you know? Yeah. It's good stuff. Man, that transition, but three kids and one on the way. That's like,
yeah, that was tough,
dude.
It was,
dude. That's good. That's good. Well, let's talk about the like nitty gritty then of like real estate. Cause I know many of us have probably used a realtor. We, you know, kind of know what's going on, but I feel like there's a lot sort of behind the scenes that we don't really know is happening.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think there's so much opportunity in this space because it's every realtor, every company is not created equal. Everyone has their own set of standards.
Yeah.
So I feel personally that there's an opportunity in the industry to raise the bar. And that's a lot of why I'm with, you know, my business is with Keller Williams because they're out in front of that and leading the way in those different areas of providing excellent service. But my whole thing is I want to be a consultant for somebody and help them achieve whatever goals that they have through real estate, because people don't realize that it's not just about opening a door or finding the house. Like the consumer might find the house like 90% of the time. It's not about finding the house.
Right.
It's how are you going to structure the contract? How are you going to structure the offer? How are you going to protect yourself in a, you know, during attorney review, during inspection periods? How are you going to actually get in at a price where you can get out or you have contingency plans? Or what does it mean to own in this neighborhood versus that area?
Right.
It's really about being the community connector. It's about helping them protect one of their largest or their largest investment.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is making sure that there's a floor on what the risk is.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, depending on what somebody's goals are, there's very different strategies. There's very different ways of going about it. So I believe that you need to be a consultant. You need to understand what somebody's goals are.
Right.
And you have to be creating value, adding value, connecting them with the people in their community to help them thrive where they are. And I believe that it's a lifelong thing. Like I'm never about a transaction.
Right.
That's silly to me. Or people, I think there's a stat out there, I'm going to butcher it, but I think like 75 or 80% of the people said that they would work with the same agent again, but only like 10% do.
Huh.
And it's not because the consumer doesn't want to, it's because the agent doesn't stay in touch.
Really?
Which is so odd to me because that relationship is like why I'm in the business.
That's the whole business, right?
Like, I mean, I want to be relational. I want to have a network of people that become family and become people that we care for each other. And hey, I might, you know, have something that I really need curry for. And I love that. Like, hey, we're all part of this community.
Yeah.
And you might have a question about, hey, does this make sense for me in the real estate space? But I'm also going to come to you for advice, or, hey, I have this idea, or, you know, I value what you think. And I think that's the beauty of it. That's why I'm in the business.
Yeah.
So yeah, like finding the houses of, you know, I think a small percentage of the people, or maybe a large percentage of the realtors, maybe that's what they think their value is, but that's, man, that's missing it. That's such a small part of it. Yeah. There's so many bigger things in the process to help keep you sane and from losing a lot of money.
Right.
So we see it. Mm. We see it all the time. People get themselves into some bad situations. Mm. And with just a little bit of advice or counseling, they could have been not in that situation. And that's what I feel like I'm here to do.
Yeah.
So, and again, it's, for me, it's a lifelong relationship. And if I fall short of building that type of relationship, I haven't succeeded.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It is your greatest investment, your largest investment for most of us, except for I have a few McLarens around the house, you know, it is your largest investment, and there's so much, it's so complicated, right? Even like you're talking about contingencies and inspections, like it is mind boggling to like take all this information in and distill it and like to give it like the best possible scenario. Right?
Yeah, for sure. Like I always tell people, you know, hey, you're probably capable of selling your own house.
Right.
But are you going to know what it means when there's a home sale contingency, or are you able to understand what a more risky loan type is, or a more risky situation is?
Right. And
I think a lot of that is really valuable, because you can get yourself into a bad position if, you know, you think you're going to be closing on your house X date, but that person still needs to sell their house, and the process just gets blown up. So not to get too deep into that, but there's a lot of things that, you know, we're trying to do behind the scenes to create value. A lot of it too is helping your clients keep the leverage, really. So from a seller's perspective, there's a, you know, very finite amount of time in the process where you hold the leverage.
Right.
And if you're trying to help your client get the most amount of money in the least amount of time with the least amount of hassle, there's a certain way of doing that, into drawing activity and people there. And if you're not intentional about it, you're going to be losing them thousands and thousands of dollars. So for me, it's just about being intentional. Like we do everything for a reason. We have systems, and we're constantly trying to build upon those systems that allow the back room to kind of run as smoothly as possible, so I can be out with people as much as possible.
Sure.
My job is really to be out in front of people, counseling them, consulting, helping them achieve their goals, hopefully having an understanding of what somebody's trying to do so I can be ahead of it. And then letting the back room kind of take care of itself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a fun business, and it's really about creating value. So from my perspective, create value for the consumer, and then looking for opportunities for that consumer to create value, whether it's pure function or whether it's for an investment. It's usually both. You want to enjoy it and not lose money on it.
Yeah.
So hopefully you can do both of those things.
Yeah.
So it's really helping people do that, which has been fun.
That's cool. I like how you present that, because I feel like in your business, as with a lot of like sort of sales businesses, you know, there's a lot of people have been burned a lot, right? There's a lot of bad realtors out
for
there.
Sure.
Like, how do you navigate some of that, you know, just as
believe me, I see it all the time.
I bet you do.
I bet you do. Yeah, no, I mean, I think the industry needs help. I think our company is out in front of that. Is how do you better the standards? Like, what are the minimum standards? And then how do you give plus one service?
Yeah.
So we're not here just to make it an okay experience. We're here to make it a great experience.
Right.
We're here to really take care of you. So my idea of sales, I'm never going to convince somebody to buy a house, nor is it my job to, or to sell a house.
Right.
What sales in my mind really is in this business, it's consulting. I'm here to consult you. I'm here to put facts in front of you, help you understand what they mean, and build a strategy around optimizing your position around what the facts are, and help you interpret them and help you with the next steps as you get more information in the process.
Right.
Whether that means negotiating or what price you should be going out at as a seller, there's so much that you can leverage to put yourself in the best position to succeed. And my job is to help do that. Like to me, it's just fun. Like it's fun. Like, how do we optimize this situation for you and to help you get, you know, the best experience you can?
Yeah.
And it's funny because not everybody has the same definition of even what that is. Like, you might assume everybody's definition of best experience is most money. I run into people all the time. It's like, no, this just has to be quick. Okay, well, there's a different strategy for that.
Right.
Or there's a different strategy for, no, the most important thing to me is our kids need to finish out school and we need to match up our timing and we need to be out of state and all these things need to take place. Well, if you're not asking those questions and you're not spending a majority of your time listening to what the needs are, you're not going to serve that person very well.
Right.
And I think that's where we miss. I think some people in the industry think it's just about finding the house, opening the door, submitting the contract. And that's not it. You're not caring for the person at all. We go back to that. People rank this literally behind death of a family member.
Right.
Like, there's a reason why.
Yeah.
It's not just dollars and cents. It's very emotional.
Yeah.
So if you're not addressing the person's emotions, you're not doing a good job.
Hmm.
And emotions are what make people act anyway. Facts make you pay attention. Emotions make you act.
Hmm.
So if you're not there emotionally with the person that you're serving, you're on completely different playing fields. Like, you're not even talking the same language.
Yeah. That's interesting. You're right. I'd never even considered it being like that. I mean, how do you constantly put yourself there? You know what I mean? How do you go about like just being there emotionally for somebody you're working with?
Yeah. So it's interesting because you have to be there emotionally, but also be steady.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a fine line. So you have to help them understand that you know what's, you know, you're in control. You know what's going on. You've seen this before because you have, but then also being empathetic to what they're going through.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's just talking back what you might sense that they're feeling like, hey, I understand this is a very daunting task to ask you to do this, this, and this, given this, this, and this, right?
Yeah.
It could be to be out of your house doing showings for the first 2 weeks and having your dog, you know, in a kennel or whatever with your, you know, like, but I'm asking you to do that for these reasons.
Right.
Because it's going to mean this, because we're going to capitalize in the first 2 weeks, get you a contract, get you to ultimately where you need to be. But really it's about understanding what that person's big why is.
Hmm.
Why are you in this position? What do you need to do? How can I serve you? So it's being steady. It's not rising to their level of emotion, but it's empathizing with their emotion.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does.
Because those are two very different things. Yeah. If you rise to the level of their emotions, then the whole thing can get off track. So you have to be very, very steady, but also empathetic to what their emotions are.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Because you really are dealing with the whole of somebody's life, right? It's not just this one investment or sell. It's the whole of their life. It's everything. Yeah, their life revolves around this, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, it's tough. It's tough for their families. It's tough for the kid, everybody involved, you know, and it's a chaotic time that, I feel is a really cool time to walk alongside somebody.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
That's what we do.
That's cool, man. What about, we talked about realtors having a hard time. What about difficult customers though? I mean, how do you navigate some of that? Is it just kind of grace, or is it, you know?
So I learned this the hard way very early on.
Okay.
And I had some very wise people here that are very experienced. I think this is good for any industry. This isn't just for real estate. Is a professional will set the expectations of what the process will look like.
Okay.
It doesn't mean we won't bend to accommodate something, but it also should mean that there's some sort of systems and standards that you, when you work with a client, hey, because I've done this before, these are some ideas of how this process will play out. And you might say, oh man, that this part just doesn't fit. Well, great, we'll bend.
Yeah.
But if you're not providing them with what the expectations are, or you're not prefacing how this is going to play out,
right,
and you're not literally laying out like step by step, what really is telling them what's coming next.
Yeah.
So if you're not out in front of them, telling them what's coming next and managing expectations and laying out what the process looks like, you can allow them to take over the process and that could get messy.
Yeah. Cause they don't know what they're doing.
Cause they don't know what they're doing. Right. And it's okay to bend to what their needs are.
Yeah.
But part of it is I learned this the hard way again, is like a consultation up front.
Mm.
Like, I will not just go start showing somebody houses. We will sit down. And if they're not willing to do that, we're not going to be working together and we're going to talk. I need to understand what drives you, Curry, of why you want to see the house that you want to see.
Right.
And then I can help come alongside you to provide a better service. I want to know why you're moving, why you need to be in at a certain date, what the reason is, what's important to you, you know, what's at stake, how are you emotionally with the pro-, like, I need to know all those things and get to know you as a person. And I feel like if you do those things, you're not going to have bad customers because you're going to do your job leading them through the process. It's amazing how many people have quote unquote bad customers. And it's just people that aren't leading. It's people that are allowing the process to just build up like into this crazy, you know, thing that's unmanageable.
Yeah.
So I found it's not perfect, right? Like sometimes you get off the rails a little bit, but I found that the better I can lead somebody up front and stay ahead of them on what to expect, it's funny how you don't end up having bad customers after that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So I've never had a bad customer. I've had a rough start to a process that I've been able to kind of, okay, let's go back to the drawing board. Let's talk about what the expectations are. And then we'll sit down again if we feel like we're still not on the same page.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much that clears things up.
Well, because there's a special touch to that though, right? Because there's like, you can walk them through the process, lead them, and become authoritarian, right? Where you're not listening to them. Like there's a tricky balance that has to take place.
Yeah. A good example, and I think this is one that I've done a better job with, is you'll hear some people, they might say, I have this crazy client. They call me at all hours of the night and they want me to be on 24/7. What they're really saying is, I was stupid for picking up the phone at 9 p.m., right. which then gave them permission to do it again.
Right.
So what would have been better is, and you wouldn't have a crazy, quote unquote, crazy client, if you were to say, hey, I'm all yours from 7 to 6.
Right.
If you're calling after 6 p.m., I'll return your call within 24 hours the next day, whatever, and set the expectation up front. Mm-hmm. And then when you don't answer, you're not feeling compelled or like anxious to call back right away because you've already educated them on what your business hours are.
Right.
Or you might say, like what I do is, if it's past a certain time at night, I'm probably not going to pick up unless I'm negotiating an offer. So if I'm negotiating and we need to do that in the evening, I will do that.
Right.
But if it's like, hey, what's the name of your preferred contractor, I don't need to call you back that night. I'll call you back the next day.
Yeah. Right.
But it's setting those expectations because then the client feels cared for still.
Yeah.
They know that, hey, no, you have a family. You're home for the evening.
You're a person.
It elevates your professionalism.
Yeah.
So it actually puts you in a better light that you're not answering the phone at 8 at night.
Right.
That's just one example.
Yeah.
But if you don't set that expectation and then you don't answer the phone or even worse, you answer it the first two times, but then after that, you don't answer it at 9 o'clock anymore. What you've just told them is they're not important anymore.
Right.
So you haven't led them.
Hmm.
So it's amazing I'm learning this all the hard way. I'm not like coming in knowing all this stuff.
Right.
Like you do it one time and then you talk to some really smart agents in the office that have done it before. They say, well, that's your problem that they're calling you at 9 at night. Like, why? What do you mean?
That's offensive. Well,
you never told them not to call you at 9 p.m. Right. In a very professional way. Just lay out what your hours are. Mm. Are you going to expect to get your attorney on the phone on Sunday morning? No, he's not in the office.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think it can elevate you as a professional, still provide great service, and make them a better customer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All those things get accomplished.
Everybody wins.
Wins. It's communication, really. Yeah. And it's setting expectations and I'm still learning it, but I think for any industry, anybody that's in a service industry, the more you can do that, the better. It's no different than your role. Like, hey, this is my prep day. If I'm teaching, I'm really sorry. I probably won't be getting back to you on Thursday.
Yeah.
But I love you. I know that you reached out and I'll make sure to get back with you on Friday or Saturday, whatever. Yeah. And if you can do those things, I feel like it cares for people while still gives you the balance that you need to get what you need done.
Yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense. I just feel like in an industry, especially like yours, the hustle, man, it's like, you feel like you've got to always be just going, right? Or you're not surviving maybe or something like that. You know, it's like,
yeah, that's tempting. It is tempting to just be running around with your head cut off.
Right.
And we have a saying here, like go from E to P, and it's going from entrepreneurial to purposeful. Mm. So entrepreneurial could in this term is like you do it all because you're the entrepreneur. You're doing the backroom stuff, you're client facing, you're negotiating. And then how do you get to purposeful? Hmm. How do you get to where you're very purposeful about your day? And for me, that's been like time blocking, very against my personality.
Oh, yeah?
I want to be doing certain things at certain times of the day. But you know how much freedom there is then?
Sure, yeah.
Because if you do that, you get the activities done that you say you're going to get done at certain times.
Right.
You have white space maybe that's left over where then you don't feel so bad if you're you know, you go golfing or whatever you do to have fun. But right. It's the same thing about how not to be running around with your head cut off, which I did and I still do at times, is if I'm looking at my week and I plan it out, I'm purposeful, not just entrepreneurial, but purposeful, and I get all the activities done,
yeah,
then why am I still running? I could choose to.
Right.
But I decided at the beginning of that week that that's a successful week. I got all the activities done. So detach from the outcome a little bit. So if I do the activities, detach from the outcome, I don't need to be running around with my head cut off.
Yeah.
Because I've already decided through history of understanding my business that if I do these things, everything is going to work out. Mm-hmm. It might not be that day. It might work out or come to fruition 3 months later.
Right.
Which is the temptation in our business, because the work I do today doesn't pay me until like 3 or 4 months right. or 3 years later.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's okay. You have to detach from the outcome and you have to just say, if I do these things, then I won't be tempted to be, you know, working all of Saturday for no reason. But if you don't understand what a good week looks like, you're going to be anxious and you're going to be running around like a crazy person, not being too efficient on what you're doing. Right. So yeah, it's a big temptation and I'm working on it.
Yeah.
I still find myself where I, you know, like this week, I didn't get to time block my week and I wasn't sure if I had a good week or not, if I got enough done, if I did what I needed to do. And so there's a little bit more anxiety around that, right?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. But if I would have been ahead of it, like I should and plan out the week, my feet would be up on the desk right now. I wouldn't be like wondering if I have to do something after right. this, you know,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I feel like you're that confronting helps. Me right now.
I know, seriously.
I'm like, oh gosh, I need to know all of this stuff. Oh man. Yeah. That's hard, right?
It's
so hard. Especially for somebody who, like we go back to the three, right? Is driven by, you know, that performance and, you know, I feel like I so often just need like tangible results to like feel normal. And then it's like, no, God's like, hey, it's not about all of that yeah. stuff. Right. And,
like, what has he done in you? Cause like you're three.
Yeah. Yeah.
We
yeah.
talked a lot about how in this space with this creative project, sometimes you're not even sure who's listening.
Right.
You'll get surprised. Yeah, you'll get right. these nice notes like,
yeah.
hey, I, you know, listen to that.
Right.
And I'm sure that makes you feel good. But in the moment, you're not even sure the exact reach.
Right.
So like, I don't know. I know, no, you've, I know you've talked about it. I know yeah. it was on a couple of your episodes you talked no, about it, but it's
yeah.
hard, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's just, I mean, it's prayer. For me, it's like prayer. It's like, I cannot find my value in this right now, you know?
Yeah.
Like all these other people telling me that I'm doing a good job is like not
yeah.
what I should be looking for. You know what I mean? Yeah. And but it's such a temptation, I think. And I would imagine for you too, like just to find your worth in that, like over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You
know? And I think it's a blessing too for your loved ones to see, like it was very cool on your anniversary episode. And I haven't met your wife in person, but you could tell that she was gushing over.
Well, we need to have you over for dinner.
That would be that awesome. That was my way of inviting myself over.
That's perfect.
I want to see those cars, McLaren's.
Yeah.
But it was cool because I think there's something special too about, you know, she might know that your tendency is to want to see as a three the results right away.
Right.
Like if it was me in your position, I'd want to be like, how many people has it reached? Like,
right.
For, I don't even know why I'd want to know that. Right. I just want to know it. Right. I want to measure everything.
Right.
I don't yeah. even know why. I want to see it on a graph. I want to see the trend line going up.
Right.
And I don't even know why. It's just how I'm wired.
Yeah.
And I think you could hear her gushing because I think it was like, hey, like this is something you're passionate about. It's right. maybe it's hard to measure. Maybe you're not sure. Like what I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it's like, no, you're doing this because you love it.
Yeah.
You're doing it because you know you're reaching people and that you're sharing some really cool stories.
Yeah.
And you're giving a platform for people to share about how Christ shows up in these secular spaces and how you have to occupy all streets. Like you can't just have all the believers in a church, in a circle, like patting each other on the back. That's not the point, right?
Yeah.
So this is a project that highlights how Christ is working in these different areas. And it's so hard to measure, which is so perfect for yeah. a three.
I know. It's like,
cause it's infuriating probably.
It is. Yeah. You but put yourself in that position.
But it's like, oh, yeah. that's such a beautiful thing yeah. to watch somebody, you know, work through.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Work through the challenges of like how you would measure something
yeah.
and to right. push through because you know, there's value in the kingdom for this.
Right. Yeah. You're totally right, man. You're reading my diary or something.
That's what this is. Yeah. It says productivity planner. It's really Curry's diary.
Yep. You know it all. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's good. I appreciate that. I think that's, yeah, I feel like we can, you know, build one another up in that way. And you know, that's the cool part about you know, the body, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's good stuff. Yeah. Gosh, it's, yeah. I could talk about that all day. But let's talk a little bit just about like buying a home. What do you think is like maybe one of the most misunderstood parts of it for like maybe a first time home buyer or whatever? Like, what do you feel like the learning curve is for most home buyers in like the real estate world?
Yeah. Oh, I think one of them is like, what is value? Like, what is something worth? Yeah. Right. So it's very interesting because there's a perceived value and it changes depending on where you are in the process.
Yeah.
And that's really hard for people to understand. So there is my house, 123 Main Street, and quote unquote, it's worth $200,000. I'm making it up. But in reality, it might be worth 200 if you're 30 days on the market, but it's probably worth 210 if you're 2 days on the market, and you might be worth 190 if you're 3 months on the market.
Right.
And it's because what something's worth is subjective, and who holds the leverage helps define what the value is.
Right.
And that's where we come in as professionals to be on the right side of that leverage, right? Yeah. Because it's not like something's worth 200 at each point in the process. It's not.
Right.
And it's the same structure. It's the same offering, but it's a market.
Yeah.
It's just like a stock market. Like, what's Apple going to be trading at 2 months from now? It all depends. It all depends. So what is it really worth? What is my house really worth? Well, I can tell you it's going to be worth more the first day in the market than it is the 50th day in the market.
Right.
I can absolutely tell you that.
Right.
And I've changed nothing about the property.
Right.
So depending on who you're representing, how do you build strategies around that?
Yeah.
So if for somebody first coming in, you know, they might want like a straight answer, like, hey, what's that house worth? It depends. When are you buying it?
Right.
What kind of loan type do you have? Do you have to sell your house to buy that one? Because that weakens your offer.
Right.
Are you going to do a 21-day close or a 60-day close? Because that weakens your offer or strengthens your offer.
Right.
So that's where it's like, if you get if you get a straight answer from any realtor about any question, like how's the market or what something's worth, run away, because it's not that simple.
Right.
You literally have to know all the factors. Well, it depends how much down, like what's your, like all this stuff. And it's not that it changes drastically because maybe like the loan type, but it might be drastic if it's, you know, time of year or what the inventory levels are in the market because it's all supply and demand, things like that. So
that's,
anyway, that's the hardest for somebody coming in
for sure.
To realize is we're dealing with a market. New houses come in every day. New houses come out every day. New buyers come in every day. New buyers come out every day.
Right.
And it's all a moving target. So some people say, hey, I'm going to sell in the spring. What's my house worth? I'll talk to you in the spring, because I could literally, it could change based on inventory and, you know, based on so many different factors.
Right.
If all three of your neighbors are up for sale at the same time, like, yes, I can give you a rough estimate. I'm willing to do that.
Right.
But it could change. And like, you need to know exactly, you know, the timing. We have to figure this out and drop a strategy around it.
Right.
So that's, I think, most difficult for people. And I think somebody that's doing hopefully a decent job is thinking about in those terms where it's not so black and white.
Right.
And it's not like, oh, you know, it's 600 because the neighbor sold for 600.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, no, that is tricky. That is really tricky stuff. That's good. It's good.
If I just confuse you enough, you'll trust me. So that's no,
just throw out vague answers.
Just throw out very confusing stuff and they'll say, okay, I trust whatever you say. No, but it is. I think there's some magic in it to taking all the different factors, putting them in, and then really being thoughtful about what you're going to do based on those factors.
Yeah, that's good.
I think that makes a good agent.
Yeah, I think so too. I love how passionate you are about, you know, people's lives, and like you're holistic in your approach to, you know, real estate. And we've gotten into so much of just how your faith plays out in what you do. I mean, it's very apparent, right? Loving people, but you know, where do you see sort of, that come into play, like on a day in and day out basis with people?
Yeah. So I think two ways. One's maybe more personal to me. One maybe is more, projects out to others, but I feel like for me, which helps maybe fuel me to be able to care for other people, is just the gratitude of being in this position, because I felt very, I felt trapped for a long time. And it wasn't because I felt like the Lord was trapping me. It's just, I felt like, man, I want to make this step into something that I'm really passionate about, that I can use my giftings for, that I feel like would be a great fit. But it takes a lot of preparation to allow for that.
Sure.
Like just logistically saving and planning and all these different things, where I feel like that perspective, like the Lord always does, he takes a situation and makes it, you know, makes the most out of it.
Right.
Is there was so much function for me of those years not doing necessarily what I love to do, because I have the perspective of, man, this is, I'm lucky. Like this is a, I have so much more gratitude. If I would have started real estate day one out of college,
yeah,
I wouldn't have the same level of gratitude and appreciation for what I'm able to do.
Yeah.
Like I'm able to create, strategize, define what my standards are, decide who I work with.
Yeah.
How awesome is that?
Right, yeah. It's
I get legit. To decide who I work with. That's awesome.
Right.
So I feel like that has allowed me to hopefully serve other people better just through that gratitude.
Right.
And then the other piece is I feel like we underestimate, like being there for somebody could be like very highly emotional and could be listening, but it could just be being consistent too. Mm. I've actually had a few people, and I've thought a lot about this. The way they've thanked me was very interesting. They said, thank you for your professionalism. And I think what they're saying is thank you for your consistency or thank you for us knowing what to expect, or just kind of being maybe steady or, you know, predictable from the standpoint of, you know, when you're going to hear from me, we have these systems, we have standards. You're not wondering what I'm doing. So I'm reporting out. You're not having to ask me a whole lot of what's going on behind the scenes. We kind of built systems around that, where I think it gives people peace of mind and they're not ever wondering what we're doing.
Yeah.
Cause we kind of are telling them ahead of time and then showing them and then being consistent. And so I've thought about, because I've had a couple people say that recently, and it's not like thank you for, it's like thank you for your professionalism. So I thought a lot about that. And I think what they're really saying is thank you for being consistent.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a big way to serve somebody in this, is not just flying all over the place, being unpredictable, because it feels like their world's being turned upside down, that if somebody can come in and be very steady, I think that's a way to serve them in a way.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, it's just a stressful part of their lives, and reaching out. And I think little things too, like little touch points to let them know that you care about them is important. So, you know, it's a very typical thing to provide like a gift at closing, whatever, but we try to do other touch points that are thoughtful. You know, we have partners that we tell, like when we have like I have a lender that I work with and a couple of really good partners and things like that. And they ask like, hey, what's really important to you? And it's what I say is that your level of service is our level of service. There's no drop off. And I really care about thoughtful touch points that you follow up maybe with a handwritten note, or a year later, you send them a card saying, hey, it's been a year. Congratulate. Like,
yeah,
let them know that you're thinking about them.
Right.
That it's more than a transaction, because it is.
Right.
And just be a normal person.
Yeah.
And just care for somebody.
Yeah. Well, because some of that stuff can be seen as like, oh, following up on business, right? Like I need to... But there's so much more to that. It's like showing somebody you actually care, and like not just wanting more business from them, but, you know, being excited that you've been in a house for a year. Like that was a horrible time. You know, we got through it together. Right?
For sure. Like it has to be about the relationship.
Right.
Because selfishly, it's not as much fun if it's not.
Right.
Like if I'm doing this and not building friendships, not building a community, it's not that much. It's not as fun.
Right.
Like it's awesome being able to do business with people that you're friends with, that you're in community with, and that you have like this growing community of people, like, you know, working with X person at, you know, Five and Hook or Aaron at his house, like that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun. Or having somebody, or it's also fulfilling too. So like having somebody like Aaron say, hey, you should talk to my neighbor. That's so fulfilling. Like really, cause it's like you think enough of me to recommend
me.
That feels great. Yeah, feels great. And so it's like, why not build a strong relationship? That's why I'm here in the first place. That's what I was missing in my last role. And if you do that, everything will take care of itself.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, don't overthink it, build strong relationships, and everything is going to work out.
Yeah.
Like care for the person, build strong relationships, treat them well, and hold their best interest in your highest regard, and everything else will work out.
Yeah.
You don't need to think about the other stuff, or you don't need to be all salesy. You don't need to be like, you don't need to do any of that.
Right.
Just provide value and love the person and everything will work out.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, like that's an evolution. Still trying to work on that. But just thinking about the ways that I felt you know, loved by people or served by people. A lot of it's just little thoughtful touch points.
Right.
And so we try to incorporate that to make people feel good.
Yeah. Well, it's mind boggling that like loving people is good for business. Like,
yeah,
man, God really does know. Like, right. I mean, that's like such a foundational aspect of being a Christian. Yet at the same time, like relationship building is good for like making a living. It's like
my yeah. wife and I were talking about how like God has dual meanings to just about everything.
Right.
It's like great sense of humor in God, but it's like, we were talking about in terms of intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
She's been doing it as part of, you know, something she's doing, and it's been really great for her. Anyways, it's like the Lord says to do it spiritually. It's very beneficial.
Right.
Turns out there's a ton of health benefits
right.
as well.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, do this because spiritually it's good for you. Oh, by the way, it's pretty good for your health for too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, that's just a silly example, right. but hey, love people. And everything else will work. I mean, it literally says those words in the right. Bible. Yeah. Like if you just put other people first and you try to be more like Christ each day,
yeah.
like your barns will be overflowed with what you need. And I feel like that was his message to me sitting in the church that one day, because in my worst moments, I'm trying to take the control back and I'm trying to earn it and I'm trying to do it myself. And I'm only going to God to ask, like putting God in the passenger seat, like, I really need your help now, but I'm at the wheel.
Right.
I feel like in that moment, I actually really could do this, but it was like really opened up and said, I'm like, can't do this. Like, I feel overextended. I'm committing to it because I know you want me here and I don't know how anything else is going to be figured out. And it was literally like that week is when the ball started rolling downhill for the first time hours. Honestly, this was like 7 at night and I woke up to a phone call the next day, and that started where this business started to take off.
Yeah.
And there was no coincidence. And it was me like, just, okay, I'll trust you. Tomorrow I might not, but right now I do.
But
that's my temptation.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like, is to totally. Take all the control back. Right. But so yeah, God's very much like that. Mm. Like, yeah, love people and everything will work out. Put people first, you know, and you'll be fulfilled,
right.
you know, and try to be more like Christ and you'll have all your needs met. And it's, you know, nothing with it makes sense until you know that that's how God is, and it all makes sense,
right? Yeah.
Do what's most countercultural, and it'll work out.
Yeah, you know? You're right. It's good stuff, man. That's great stuff. It's been so fun to hang out and talk.
Yeah, man.
And talk.
We're missing coffees, though.
I know, right?
We should have did that.
We'll make up for that next week.
Yes, we will.
get some coffee together. Let's jump into the final two questions, though. Does that work for you?
That works.
Okay, so my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Oh, I worked at a dry cleaner in high school. And Eminem, the rapper, we used to do his dry cleaning. Yeah.
Are you for real?
So hopefully this gets out to him. I'm not proud of this. I actually took $50 from Eminem's pocket.
No.
I did.
Are you?
So you're supposed to, like, if you find something, you're supposed to put it in the little jar that's sitting there. And he would dry clean like sweatpants and t-shirts. Like, that's all he had. He had like jumpsuits. You know, he had like the Jordan jumpsuits. This is, you know, 15 years ago.
Oh my God.
And so we'd pick him up at his house or whatever. Somebody would pick him up. And I found two things in his pocket one day. It was a little post-it note with lyrics scribbled all over it, which I took as well. And I took $50. So I stole $50 from Eminem. I'm not proud of it, but I did.
Oh my God.
It's a confession today.
That is incredible. Yes.
So a post-it note from Eminem with lyrics and $50.
Dude.
So hopefully that doesn't get me in trouble. Edit that out if it does. But yeah, that was my weirdest job.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Wow. Yep. So close to like greatness,
yes,
you know?
I know.
Man, and it's hilarious. I was going to ask what he had dry cleaned, you know, that it's like
white t-shirts and sweatpants.
Oh my gosh, dude's taking them to dry cleaner.
Oh, that's priceless.
Oh gosh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. All right, so my final question then is, what would be one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring the kingdom more into their work?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think that to do that, kind of like if, like, to love others, you have to know God's love. I kind of feel like that a little bit, where I feel like when you feel that sense of gratitude for what the Lord's provided you, it's easier to kind of project that onto somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, I really, and not to say you have to have it all figured out to share the love of Christ. That's not at all what I'm saying. But I do feel like if you can operate out of a sense of gratitude, and you can really have a clear vision of what's God has done in your life, it makes it more easy for you to then love other people.
Wow.
And I think that has helped me with just the perspective of where I was in the situation that he allowed me to kind of move on from, and then blessed this, I feel a different sense of gratitude. And I would also say that sometimes the biggest risk is not taking a risk. Hmm. So we feel like inherently that there's less risk in staying put. Like if we're honest, we think that.
Right.
Like for me, it was way more risky to stay at that other job. Hmm. But most people from the outside say that seems like a big risk.
Right.
Why would you leave that job? How do you know that that's not more risky to stay?
Right.
So we don't think about it in those terms. Hmm. But I think it was also very helpful for me to allow God a time and space to work. And what that looked like for me was taking a risk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not, I mean, consult people that you love.
Right.
Don't do something stupid. Yeah. But if it's like you believe in it, other people, you know, that are really wise and think that, hey, this sounds like a great thing for you, let God show up. So if you're not taking any risks and you don't understand what God has done for you, it's going to be hard to take that risk. And it's also going to be hard to then help others see Christ if you don't have a sense for what he's done in your life.
Right. That's good, man. It's good stuff. It's challenging, even right now. So
awesome,
thanks for making space for me and making time. And
yeah, it's my
good
pleasure.
To chat, man.
This has been a pleasure. Thanks for asking me to be on.
All right, man. Well, we'll see you around.
Sounds good. All thanks right. for having me.
Thanks. Well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Mike Thornton, just talking real estate and all the good stuff. I hope you got something out of this episode. As always, I would love to hear what you got out of this episode. What stuck out to you? I think the story for me is always just this incredible piece of how God gets us to where we are. And I think Mike's story is just so cool, and that every piece of his story was sort of necessary to bring him to where he is today. So I hope that encourages you a little bit, that if you're in a season where it doesn't feel like necessarily you're doing what you're called to do, or, you know, you're not at your final career, that you see that God uses every single ounce of where you're at to build on what he has for you, that you were called to do good work in this world. And it may not feel like it right now, but that I do believe God is preparing you for something. So yeah, just go with that encouragement this week and own it, you know? So do all that. And until next time, get out there and hustle.